Normally we move on to Conservation Committee, and what we'll do is, I think, because of the timing, we'll go to Finance. And with the Commissioner Falcone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
After you.
Sir. And what I'm going to do is, I'm going to change and do item number two first and then number one. Is that okay? The first order of business is the approval of the previous committee meeting minutes from the November 3, 2010 meeting, which have already been distributed. Is there a motion for approval?
So moved.
Commissioner Martin?
Second.
Commissioner Bean? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same. All right. And we'll move right along here to the second item, financial overview. Mr. Mike Jensen?
Good morning, Commissioner Falcone, Commissioners. My name is Mike Jensen, Director of Administrative Resources Division. I have a relatively brief presentation for you this morning, and I think Carter's going to have more in-depth information about the House and Senate bills that have been filed recently. I'm just going to focus on the year-end summary of revenues from the prior fiscal year. Then I'll give you an update where we are in this fiscal year for revenue, a quick budget update, and a little talk about this fiscal year, the 2.5% reduction target that we've recently been given by state oversight. We'll start first with year end of last fiscal year state park revenue. It held about even with the prior fiscal year 9. In 10, we ended with $38.4 million. In 9, we had $38.49. So we were about $93,000 behind the prior fiscal year. But that's not bad, because the prior fiscal year had a pretty strong, 9 was a strong summer, and it had a strong fall as well, beginning of the year. Miscellaneous revenue, which includes donations and some other categories, was down by $268,000, or 26%. Park passes did great. They were up 3.7%, $209,000. Entrance fees were up 2%. That's about $223,000. Concessions and facilities were down slightly. I'll get you caught up on the next slide, is the boat revenue. The revenue is up 6.45%, which is $1.3 million in total. The tax is down by 6.15%, or that's in the whole $135,000. Titles were up almost 1.7%, or $73,000. But the majority of the revenue that we account for here is in registrations. That was up nearly 10%, 9.8%, which accounts for $1.39 million in revenue. I think at the August Commission meeting, Commissioner Duggins had a question about titles. Why was the revenue up? When we did the fee increase, they actually increased the title fees as well. If we look at the same period, the count of titles was down by almost 5.3%. So that accounted for a little difference there. We ended the year with boat and titling sales were very slow. Again, I think when we get into this current fiscal year, we'll see a slight improvement. I think they've actually sold some boats this fiscal year, but we'll get to that when we get to the current fiscal year. Let me go to the license revenue real quick for you. License revenue, we ended the year, we were down in total $1.18 million, but that amount includes the lifetime licenses. And we've gone over this previously, but just to remind you, we had a spike when they increased the fee at the end of, right before 2009, and some of that trickled into 2009. Actually, a significant amount trickled into 2009. So when you exclude those Fund 9 revenues, actually looking very good at the end of the prior fiscal year, nearly 3% up, $2.61 million. The next slide is going to give you an easier comparison than we've had in the past. It was hard to compare 3 years, but it's much easier to compare two. So when you look at this slide, you can see the variance between 2009 and 2010 fairly quickly and fairly easily. You can see that we did very well on residential hunting licenses. That's a 9.61% improvement. That's $819,000. And you can see we did well on residential fishing, and we did pretty strong on combination licenses as well. Again, just reiterating what was on the previous slide, Fund 9 revenue, that's an increase of 2.95% if we look at just the Fund 9. The Lifetime License Endowment Fund is, we have restrictions, so we don't have as great as use as we do on the Fund 9 monies. I went ahead and put this next slide in just for reference.
Before you leave the current slide, why were we down so much in the other?
Yeah, what is other?
The other includes the Lifetime License. That's the primary reason because this fiscal year we didn't expect to sell them because they cost so much more. Right at the beginning of 2009, fiscal year 2009, there was a huge spike. Our staff just could not handle the amount of revenue that came in, so it actually showed up in 2009. So when I'm comparing 2010 to 2009, that lifetime license created this anomaly. So when we get into the next biennium, that anomaly is going to fade away.
Are there any other licenses in the other category besides
there are
lifetime that were markedly up or markedly down?
No. I mean, lifetime is really causing this. When we get to the next slide, you'll see that the reason why I included the next slide is so you could so you could look at the count. When you look at the total count and you exclude the Fund 9, you can see that number doesn't even budge. Because the reality is most of this change is a result in a change in about 4,000 less lifetime licenses. And that while it doesn't skew the count, it has a significant skewing effect on the revenue. That's the main reason why I put the slide in, so you can see that a small population of licenses can really throw off the revenue in terms of comparing.
What did we raise the prices to on those?
Lifetime licenses, I believe, is $1,800. They went up from $1,000.
Yeah, hunting and fishing.
Did I answer your question? I hope I did. I tried. I'll move on to the next group of slides. Is basically, it's going to be a pretty quick, brief update again on the revenue. This fiscal year, state park receipts are doing very well. They had a very strong October and December. When we compare month to month to prior year, October was 21% better than last year. December was 24% better than last year. So we're up $900,000, so they're performing very well. In terms of park passes, that accounts for $619,000 of this amount. They're up 45%, so they're doing a great job. Concessions is up $100,000, which is about 8.3%. Entrance fees are also up $436,000. That's about a 16% increase over the prior year. So they're doing good so far, very well. Boat revenue, it's down 4.86% or $197,000. One of the things to remember, the biggest source of revenue here is registrations. The peak period for that isn't going to happen until later in the spring, right before the summer, and we'll probably catch up. But when I break it down by the categories on the sales tax, it's currently down about 4%, but it's gaining. Back in November, it was down almost 6.5%. So that indicates some people are actually this fiscal year selling and transferring some boats. Titles are up 5.9%, almost 6%. That's 55,000. And the registrations, just because of the timing, this is their slow period, they're down 8.6%. That accounts for most of that 197,000 when you compare it to the prior year, year to date. So I think the outlook is actually improving with respect to the titling and the tax. License sale revenue, as of December 31st, 2010, this fiscal year we've collected $67.36 million in total compared to the prior fiscal year, $67.71. Again, that includes that anomaly at the beginning. Well, that includes that anomaly in a lifetime license. When you exclude the lifetime licenses, the Fund 9 revenue is up 1.4%, and that's an increase of 2.16%. The next slide is going to be easier for you to see that because it gives a variance between the two fiscal years by each of these groupings. You can see we're performing very well with residential on the fishing licenses as a whole, as well as with the residential hunting licenses. Residential fishing is 7.37% better, that's $758,000. And again, on the other category, the biggest factor in there were the lifetime licenses. And we expect it to perform poorly just because of that anomaly. When we present information to Carter and other senior staff, we remind them as well why this is skewed like that. The next slide will show you the count. And this is actually looking very good compared to the analysis that was done way back in 2008. The total number of licenses sold is up 3.1%. Hunting licenses are up 1.5%. Total fishing's up 7.5%. And the total combos are up 1.6%. When I show you the variance on that, you can see every one of these high-level categories, which has many different types of license rolled into each category, is doing very well compared to the prior year. So I think this is favorable for the department as a whole. This is better than I think the analysis had anticipated about 2 years ago when they were anticipating the fee increase. So we're doing well, very strong on residential fishing and on the combination licenses.
I'm going to stop you there and just ask Carter or somebody, I mean, how are other states doing? Economies, and you know, you hear that everybody else's licensing is going down. Do any comparisons at all, or what other states are doing? Or
we do, and I think it's highly variable, Chairman. Yeah, I think we are a bit of an outlier compared to other states based on what we're hearing. I think, you know, the good news here is, you know, we'll recall that we saw a significant dip in non-resident purchase of hunting and fishing licenses. We're starting to see some upward movement there, and I think that's a reflection of improved economy, more folks feeling confident about traveling across borders and coming to Texas, and so that's a good thing. So obviously we'll continue to push on that. Also, the improvements we're seeing on the fishing side, you'll recall we were very concerned about that over the last year or two, and so seeing those improvements are very positive. But yeah, Chairman, to ask your question, we do kind of monitor what's going on in other states and see what's happening, and feel good about where we're positioned right now.
Yeah, the state's having a tough time.
We're certainly having a very difficult time budget-wise. You know, that's a recurring theme across the country.
The next slide gives a comparison to revenue through December compared to the comptroller's revenue estimate. We're tracking favorable because if you look at this, only 33% of the fiscal year has elapsed. So we've collected at least that or more in each one of these categories. Fund 9, which is Game, Fish, and Water Safety, is at 43.5% collected, so we're doing well there. We're on target. And you can see from the last slide, we're doing well with the hunting and fishing license sales. State Park Fund 64, it's right on target. 33, it's going to be tight to meet the BRE, but we're on target for it. And in terms of all the different funding pieces that roll into this, state park fees are up 1.5% compared to the prior year. So we're doing well in Fund 64 on that. On both of these, in the comptroller revenue estimates, they're still estimating high on their BRE interest, and we're just not going to achieve it in that comp object. We're doing well on other things, royalties, oil and gas. We're doing well on 9 and 64. Local Park Fund, which is Fund 467, collections are ahead of the BRE target. You can see at 46%. The primary contributing factor to that is federal funds that we pulled in that go into that fund. The other category is made up of a number of different items. It includes artificial reef funds, the lifetime license endowment funds, the license plate and conservation capital account, and the shrimp buyback program money is in there. So other is at 62, almost 63% compared to the BRE. Most of that is tied to the artificial reef account, which is account 679, because of donations that have come in. And there have been a number of companies and donors who really contributed to that. So we're looking good in terms of overall comparison to the BRE. I only have three more slides. The next one is just a high-level summary of the budget adjustments. In August, we presented a $423.2 million budget that was approved. Since then, we have some adjustments to increase it. We have some federal grants that have come in, about eight different types of sources of federal funds for 7.1. Then we have federal grants UB, which is unexpended balance forward. Those are federal funds that existed in prior years but just have not been obligated. Their life continues, so we're bringing them into this fiscal year. We have appropriated receipts, and these are primarily donations of $6.6 million, $3.8 plus a UB unexpended balance amount of $6.6, and license plate revenue unexpended balance forward of that comes in a force account. That is how we fund the infrastructure projects, the staff that work on those projects. That's a total adjustment amount of $28.9, so the adjusted budget as of December 31st is $452.1 million. The next slide will break that into the high-level categories. Internally, we have larger categories than this, but for a roll-up on salaries and other and benefits, this is what we expected, with 33% of the year exhausted and 67% remaining. That's on target with what we expected. The operating equipment, grants, and capital projects, we still have additional funds available, and some of that is just the nature of what we're facing with the legislative session. Carter's going to get into that, where we have to be as conservative as we possibly can in expending this fiscal year's funds so we can strategically do what we need to do once we get some direction from you, the commission, and from our executive management. The last slide is probably going to segue into what Carter really needs to brief y'all on in terms of what's going on right now. We do have a directive from state oversight to reduce the 2011 budget by 2.5%. The actual amount, it's kind of small down there on the bottom, it's $5,993,819. Executive management has discussed a number of strategies how to hit that target. We have a number of options that can be considered, but that is the target they expect us to hit. And they had led us to believe we had until May, but now we have until the end of this week to try to give them additional information on what those strategies are going to be. So with that, I'll take any questions that you may have. If you don't, then Carter will probably take it from here.
Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Jensen.
Can I wait? Sorry. Going back about two or three slides, you have appropriated receipts, for example, expended balances of 6.6. Okay, you see that?
Yes. We have
it says appropriated, so those are dollars we can spend in this fiscal year?
Those are dollars available in the budget right now. That's part of the adjustment. That I can break it down for you. I mean, we have on the UB piece, appropriated receipts, some of that is from one of our riders, Rider 3, almost $450,000. Then we've received additional artificial reef money, so artificial reef UB from that comes in, that's $4.4 million of it.
And then we stop you there in the sense of, do we have something to spend that on? I mean, do we have reef?
Yeah, oh yeah, we've got a bunch of artificial reef projects in the pipeline.
In this fiscal year?
I can't speak to that. Robin, do you...
Can you keep rolling this over, or if it's appropriated now, but I mean, what happens next year?
Yeah, is it UB or not? Just quickly.
I'm just asking example of that.
Robin Rikers for Coastal Fisheries again. You know, the artificial reef program is a dedicated account, so it's really only can be used for that sole purpose. We certainly are aggressively looking at projects in the next year. I can't say that we're going to use all of those up, but we will be working on some key significant projects. We've really been pushing our nearshore program, and we've been pushing a program down near Corpus Christi to get a new site. Working with the new Minerals Management Service and trying to get some activity going down there. So we've got projects on the way and on the books and moving. I don't know the exact dollars amounts that we will be looking at right now.
Okay, good.
But Chairman, I got...
Are these on... Let me see, let's ask the question. Are these on our fiscal year? When it says appropriate receipts, is that geared to our fiscal year or is that geared to the federal fiscal year? I would be confused about that.
Our fiscal year.
The money. Yeah.
These are geared to our fiscal year. Some of these are bringing in prior year money into this fiscal year. Yeah.
So it's bringing in the state appropriated. Okay, now the biennium will end, the new biennium will start September.
Yes.
11th.
That's correct, yes, sir.
If you haven't spent this money,
it's in a dedicated, the cash is going to be dedicated. The cash is there. And, can't be used for other purposes.
But if it's not appropriate.
If the legislature doesn't give us appropriation authority, then we can't spend it. If the cash will sit there.
And it can be used to offset that.
And Carter's going to probably get into more details across the board on that in terms of what the House and Senate are recommending right now.
It took me a long time to get to where I was trying to get to.
Okay. Chairman, just to clarify, though, appropriated receipts, what we're talking about here are donations. They bring their own appropriation authority and they can be UB forward. So if we're not able to get those encumbered this year, they will move forward into the next biennium with respect to the donations for the Rigs to Reef program.
Every they're appropriated, but you haven't used them. And how from a budget point of view, relative to the legislature, then can they then apply that as, I guess, a deficit? This guy's up from the beginning. This is a classic example of something
Gene McCarty, Deputy Executive Director for Administration. They're appropriate receipts, but they are donations. So they bring their own appropriation authority with them, and they're UBillable. So their appropriation life stays with them, and continues on as we UB them until they're expended.
Until they're expended?
Yes.
So theoretically 3 years from now?
3 years from now, that's correct.
Okay. So aren't you any time until, I mean, in other words, we'll have an opportunity or a right to spend that money at any time?
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay.
Under the current rules.
Okay.
Under current rules.
The
appropriation rules can change at any time, but under current rules, that is the rule. Now, I don't expect appropriation rule to change on donations. That would defeat the whole purpose for donations.
Yeah.
But stranger things have happened.
These are all donations.
Yes, sir.
Let me ask that actually. When we get a federal grant, we talked about this morning. We get a federal grant. Do we have to get legislative authority to expend that grant money, or is that ours to spend when, as long as it's in accordance with the federal directives?
As long as we're staying within the terms and conditions of that grant brings its own appropriation authority with it. They give us independent appropriation authority for it, but it's not restrictive. It can grow because federal grants bring in their own appropriation authority. So, you know, in our budget, you'll see a line item for federal funds, but that's not a limiting line item. You know, you can exceed that with additional grants.
What I'm asking is, can the state legislature affect that? So either freeze it, limit it in any way, a federal grant?
They can. They can write into legislation, write into the Appropriation Act that the state does not have the authority to spend federal funds. I mean, but they have to pass that in because the rules as they exist right now in the current appropriation authority. Federal funds bring their own appropriation authority.
And on the two base bills that Carter's going to talk to you right now, they have not changed that. They could attempt to change that during the session, but they have not at this point.
That means the rules.
The rules that they come with their own appropriation authority.
Any more questions, anybody? All right, now we'll go back to item number one, update on Texas Park and Wildlife Department progress in implementing the Texas Park and Wildlife Department Land and Water Resources Conservation and Recreation Plan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got three matters that I want to talk about. The first two have to do with securing permission to publish a couple of minor rule changes, and then the third has to do with an update on the proposed budget bills that we've seen in the House and Senate that have been filed. The first one has to do with just a basic correcting a citation to the statewide hub program, the historically underutilized business program rules. And in that regard, we're proposing an amendment to Chapter 51, Section 171 of the Parks and Wildlife Code concerning historically underutilized business program. The current rule adopts by reference the provisions in Chapter 1 of the Texas Administrative Code, Chapter 1, Section 111.111 through Section 111.128. That sets forth the requirements that have to be followed by state agencies in implementing the hub business rules. Those provisions have now been moved in the Texas Administrative Code to Chapter 34, Section 20.11 through Section 20.28. Our proposed amendment to the Parks and Wildlife Code would simply update that reference, make it consistent, it's non-substantive, and so we're simply asking for your permission to publish those changes in the Texas Register. The second request we have with respect to securing your permission to publish a change in the Texas Register has to do with how we allocate the super combo funds to the different stamp funds. As you know, we've got an upland game bird stamp, a migratory game bird stamp, a saltwater stamp, and a freshwater stamp. And so by Parks and Wildlife Commission-approved rule, we conduct an annual survey of our super combo buyers to see who is utilizing what resource, and then we make an appropriate pro rata allocation to the different stamps to distribute the super combo funds to those stamps. In the last 5 years, we really have not seen any appreciable changes from those surveys. And so in an effort to help reduce costs, we are proposing to go to a three-year survey regime as opposed to an annual survey regime. But we will use at the end of those 3 years when we do a survey, we'll look at the historical average of the last five surveys just to make sure that we've got appropriate information. And so cost-saving measure, something that we don't think will have any impact on this, but would save us time and money. We'd like to publish this proposal in the Texas Register for Public Comment and bring that proposal back to the Commission for consideration in March. And so, with y'all's permission, we'd like to move forward on that, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Okay. The next item I have is just a very sobering one, and it has to do. I want to give you out of the information behind the published House and Senate bills that HB 1 and SB 1 that came out with the proposed base budgets. Really, a lot of commonalities between the two bills overall. The Senate bill was a little bit restrictive overall from a state government perspective. On our end, we certainly saw that with respect to the Senate's support for law enforcement. But let me kind of walk you through the key elements of this at the top level and then kind of what it means to the department and the average hunter and angler and park enthusiast that is looking to Parks and Wildlife for our work. The proposal is basically to reduce the biennial budget by $162 million over the biennium. That's a 25% cut to the budget. That, of course, would be on top of the 5% cut that we've already taken. The way it's proposed is that much of that cut would be front-end loaded in the first fiscal year, $120 million of reductions in fiscal year 2012, and then $42 million in fiscal year 2013. The proposal is for us to reduce our FTEs, our full-time equivalents, by 304 positions in the first fiscal year, and then bring that up a little bit in the second fiscal year to see a reduction in only 233 FTEs. So what does that mean to the agency in terms of our business? Here it is. All of capital equipment purchases are proposed to be eliminated. So that means no funding for vehicles, boats, trailers, computers, capital equipment, lawnmowers, tractors, printers, essentially all of the tools of our business. The proposal is to eliminate all grant fundings, and so no funding available for local park grants, outreach grants, trail grants, shooting range grants, landowner incentive program grants. The proposal in both the House and Senate bill is to eliminate any new funding for capital construction. Rich had mentioned our LAR request, but the proposal in both bills is to eliminate any new funding for capital construction and to limit funding for capital repairs to only that which can be UB. So actually, they are looking at us being able to UB those funds that we have that are not encumbered, but there is a proposed limitation on how much funding we can UB for the Fund 9 divisions. And so that's an issue for us. They've also proposed to eliminate all funding for land acquisition over the biennium. They have proposed a 15% across the budget cut to division and agency administration. 15%. I'll come back to this because this is an issue that we need to talk about. Propose eliminating the construction-based appropriation life for local park grants. That's a real problem for grants that we've already given out to communities that have not been expended, and so that's an issue we want to work with the legislature to fix. I'll now kind of talk about some of the division-specific cuts that were identified. Start with Communication Division funding, proposing to reduce the funding in the first fiscal year by 40%, but then in the second fiscal year, reduce it by 2%. And the thought process there is basically that we would defer activities in the first half of the fiscal year. From an operational perspective, that's very problematic. We can't simply defer activities, whether it's hunter education or angler education or butter ed or the magazine for 6 years and that, or 6 months, and then just pick it up. So an issue that we'll come back to on how we normalize this or try to across the years of the biennium. Proposed reduction in our IT divisional funding by 25% in the first fiscal year and 22% in the second fiscal year. Problematic for a lot of reasons. One, they've looked at taking out all of the extra funding that we need to support the state's data center project and take that from our IT budgets to cover that. That is really debilitating to that division, so that's an issue that we certainly want to work with the legislature on. A proposed reduction to the State Park division by 18% in the first fiscal year and 15% in the second. They've contemplated as to how they've kind of come up with these proposed numbers that we would look at transferring or closing 7 state parks and several regional offices. And also deferring any minor repairs in state parks for a period of 6 months, and then significantly reducing funding for our cultural and natural resources work in state parks and business development. In the House bill, law enforcement division funding reduced by 11% in the first year and 9% in the second, with a proposal to defer law enforcement training in the academy for a period of 6 months and reduce our game warden force by 20 game wardens or 20 game warden positions. The Senate bill does not go down that path. On inland fisheries, the proposal to reduce the budgets by 12% in the first year and 11% in the second would eliminate the funding that we have received for aquatic invasive species, and also reduce funding for the golden algae research that we've been working on for so long. In coastal fisheries, proposal to reduce the fiscal year 12 budget by 10%, 9% in the second year of the biennium, and significantly reduce the shrimp license buyback program. In wildlife division, a proposal to reduce the budget in the first fiscal year by 18% and then 11% in the second fiscal year, and reduce our wildlife diversity and research program by $1 million, with also a proposed elimination of FTEs and to defer our public hunting program by 6 months. Again, an operational issue that it'd be very, very practically difficult to implement. Also, a proposed reduction of our infrastructure division by $900,000 in the first fiscal year and 15% in the second. That doesn't begin to really cover the true impacts to infrastructure, because without new capital construction authority, which is where most of our staff expenditures are tied, infrastructure takes a very significantly, disproportionately large hit there. Reduce grant administrative staff funding by 50%. And again, reduce the administrative divisions by between 14% to 16% over the course of the biennium. So, again, overall, a proposed 25% reduction to the agency's budget and a significant reduction of full-time equivalent positions. As we think about how to proceed under the fiscal clarity and realities that the legislature is facing, you know, obviously, Parks and Wildlife is not somehow being singled out. All agencies are being asked to significantly reduce their budget, so we're seeing that across the board. We do have some issues, though, that I think it's important that we work on with respect to perhaps technical changes or operational changes to give the agency flexibility to operate and conduct its mission within the confines of the resources, and those are the kind of areas that we want to focus on. For instance, where you see these proposed reductions heavily front-end loaded in the first fiscal year, looking at how we equalize those over 2 years is going to be important to us. Otherwise, very difficult to do things, particularly in our communication and outreach and statutorily required hunter ed and angler ed. I mentioned the construction life reductions for current local park grant funds. That's a very important technical fix because communities that have already been given grants, you know, they have a certain time frame to expend those funds. And if they're told they have to have them expended by the end of fiscal year, this fiscal year, that's going to be very problematic for communities. There was an interesting mechanism built into the bill with a thought about an alternative revenue generation idea for state parks. It would require legislation to do this, but it has to do with the proposed voluntary checkoff box when you register your vehicle, a voluntary $5 registration box on your vehicle registration that you could donate money. They have estimated and built into the budget that that would accrue $1,600,000 for state parks on that front. Now again, that would have to take legislation to be passed in order for that to be authorized, and we think that estimate is ambitious. An exemption, or we're asking for, I think, an exemption for transferability so that we can look at being able to transfer funds, particularly into IT, which is taking a disproportionately large hit to cover the data center costs, and that's something that's certainly we're focused on. Also, the way the budgets are written right now, the line items for capital repairs and equipment are essentially lined out. And so there would be no ability to transfer money from one strategy into that. And you think about the operation is diverse and sizable as ours, inevitably there are going to be emergency expenditures that need to be made, and that's something that we certainly want to look at. Also, with the land acquisition fund taken out, should we sell the Palladura Canyon, the Fortress Cliffs portion of Palladura Canyon State Park to a conservation buyer, as has been authorized by the commission, there'd be no place to put those proceeds. So there's a lot of technical issues like that which Gene and his team have been poring over and trying to identify so that we can try to work with the legislature to address this and manage through it as best as we can. A very sobering picture for anybody associated with state government, certainly the colleagues inside this agency. We have committed to our colleagues to make sure that we are sharing this information with folks that work here, and that means sharing information that is not always good. And so we have distributed this initial analysis across the agency. We'll be holding a town hall meeting on Monday to talk about it, and committed to making sure that our colleagues know what's going on to the extent that we're able to share it and know that information. So with that, I'll stop there and see if you have any questions of either Gene or myself.
Well, you'll keep us in, you know, kind of abreast as changes come or in areas that you need our help. I'll be here in Austin a lot, and certainly want to do all I can on my part to knock on however many doors and do whatever I can on my part, but just to kind of keep abreast to the developments on these situations.
Absolutely, Commissioner, and I appreciate that very much. I think you know, it's imperative that going into these times and this session that the commission is actively engaged with us as we work with legislators to make sure they understand some of the implications and consequences of these decisions. They'll make the best decisions possible given what they know, but we'll need your help in that regard. We are expecting probably a Senate Finance Committee hearing sometime first, as opposed to a House Appropriations Committee hearing, and we'll be keeping you apprised of that.
Is it helpful to attend those?
I think it can be, yeah. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. And also when we have an opportunity to visit with members who have questions and interest with the particulars of our budget.
Do you know the rationale for the differences in cuts the first year versus the second year? Why they're doing it that way? Anybody know the answer to that? Or why they're making those recommendations?
Well, when we asked the LBB, they pretty much indicated they thought that those were the kind of programs that could be suspended for a short period of time. So they front-loaded and said, just suspend this operation for 6 months and then restart it. I don't think that their rationale really works very well for most of these programs that they've outlined to cut that way. Operationally we just cannot do it. So we've got to get some relief from that some way. And when I kind of explained to them that was problematic to us, they kind of went, oh, okay, we get it. You know, we're not going to fight you, but you're going to need to talk to the members to get that changed.
You know, for instance, Chairman, you know, if we were to suspend our hunter education activities the 1st of September, what would that mean on the opening day of dove season and going full throttle into hunting season? Be an issue in terms of a statutory requirement of the agency? It'd be an issue with respect to law enforcement out there in the field. And again, operationally, it's just very hard to stop something like that for that finite period of time and then pick it up immediately 6 months later. So something that we need to work through operationally with them.
Because I think a lot of us can understand the need for reducing costs in all the different areas of state government, but to do it this way makes it almost impossible to work. I mean, you just can't stop doing business for 6 months and then start up again.
Yeah, that's correct.
And so how do you propose that we approach this, to at least make this maybe one of the starting points on how to give us some more leeway on how to run the department for the next 2 years under these circumstances?
Well, and I think it's a great question, Mr. Chairman. You know, we are still completing our analysis of what is actually contained and intended within these budgets. Gene and his team every day are discovering something new, as are other analysts inside the agency. You know, we need to complete that and then have a comprehensive list of really kind of what are our technical and practical and operational problems or issues associated with it, and then work with the commission then to strategically communicate that to members so that they understand the consequences of budgeting things, for instance, in that fashion. And also propose some other alternatives if they're willing to consider those. We understand we're going to have to manage down to a number. We all certainly get that. We've done our part in the past. We always will do our part. To the extent we have some flexibility to do that, that would help us a lot in carrying out the mission of this agency.
That's where we're going to do influencing. And of course, we've got all the legislators out to all the commissioners to see who knows who, and in particular the commission doing something in the House. Is and then find out, you know, who are going to become chairman of these various committees and who are the influencers and that kind of thing, and then, you know, go knock on their doors and explain why, you know, doing it this way won't work or can't work or makes it doubly expensive once you get 6 months down the line and start and stop something. That just takes a lot of knocking on doors and, you know, get an appointment.
The issue you brought up about, and you used the example of the Porter's Cliff property sale, if that transaction takes place, what happens to the fund?
Those funds are land sale proceeds for Fund 64, and they will go, and that's a dedicated fund account. So they go into that account, but they're not appropriated. So they're just going to end up building fund balances. Now, Fortress Cliffs has some additional problems with it in that it's got federal funds in it. So if we don't immediately reinvest those federal funds back into another project, then we've got to refund the feds, so to speak. So Fortress Cliff sale has a number of different moving parts in it, but that portion of it that is Fund 64 related will go into Fund 64 and remain there as fund balances until we get appropriation authority for them.
So then it seems to me it would be in our best interest to not try to sell it.
it's in our best interest right now to try to get a simple line item in our capital budget rider, which would allow us to sell it, which would allow us to appropriate those funds. We have the land sale proceeds rider in place. It didn't get, this is one of those technical adjustments. The land sale proceeds rider is still in place. So the rider gives us one piece of authority to appropriate those funds, but the capital budget rider has to also have a line in it to where you move the money to, and there's not, that line doesn't exist now. We just need to have that line reestablished in the capital budget rider and have it an estimated zero amount, and then we can grow it. So our best action at this point in time is that simple technical adjustment within the bill.
I think then, Commissioner, if we're not able to get that done, then you're right. We ought to just fold the property into the Paladura Canyon State Park and use that as part of the State Park complex there.
You mentioned that there were six or seven parks that were slated to be closed. Have they identified the parks that they think we should close?
Well, and I want to clarify that. They have, you know, proposed reductions in, you know, our strategies, and you know how they budget by strategies. And so, you know, proposed reduction in state park divisional funding. And then they provided the rationale behind how they thought we could accomplish that. And part of it was a suggestion that we could transfer seven parks to local entities. And visiting with the LBB, we understand then the rationale for that was the Rider 31 State Park Quality Study that had identified some parks that the consultants felt like could be transferred to a local entity. Obviously, there's a presumption there that those are the right parks, and then secondly, that the local communities would want to take on those parks and own and steward those. And I will say we're not getting a lot of demand from communities coming to us asking for our parks and taking on their stewardship. So I think that'll be a challenge to facilitate. So I think, Mr. Chairman, unless there's any more questions on this, we will keep you all closely apprised as we move ahead. Again, we expect a Senate Finance Committee hearing sometime in the not too distant future, and appreciate everybody's support as we go forward.
Well, I think we'll list that out.
Any other questions or comments? Chairman Holt, I wish we had item number 3, how this has been solved, but we don't.
Yeah.
So the committee has completed its business.
Now, this is going to be the topic of conversation for the next 6 months or so. And so I guess, June, around June 1st, we'll go.